It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
Daily is Daily Vikings Entertainment. We just want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl before we die.
I will ride with this group.
Seriously, man. Please.
And away we go.
All right, Purple Daily on draft. If you thought this show was going to stop now that the draft is over with, you are dead wrong. This launches every Monday right here on the Purple Daily YouTube channel and podcast feed. And yes, we do live for the draft. That's what this show is all about. These two dudes were slinging takes on stage. They went to the hot take mic. They didn't get booed, unlike me. That happened to get booed.
You earned that boo, Declan.
You definitely earned that. Yeah.
That's okay. You know, I've gotten mixed reactions. I've heard what you guys have just said, and I've also heard, you know, I think you're right. And I said, that's what a hot take's all about, dividing our country into two different types of areas. You're right or you're wrong. But luckily, I don't have to defend that take because I was able to just deliver it quick and go back to my seat. But Purple Daily on draft right here on the Purple Daily YouTube channel every Monday. Hit that subscribe button and the like button. Pretty straightforward episode here. We're going to go over what we liked, maybe what we didn't like about the draft. We had a full episode with Mackie and Judd and myself that also launched on Monday. Kind of talking about Mel Kiper maybe being a little bit too harsh and maybe mortgaging the future too much for the Vikings, which I guess let's just kick things off right there. I mean, Forno, did the Vikings mortgage their future for this year's draft? Did they put themselves in a hole for what they were able to do by trading a bunch of future picks?
No, they didn't mortgage the future, but the future is going to be a little more difficult, and I think that's inarguable because you just don't have the assets to be able to continue to add. One of the ideas behind that talking about like trading up and trading down is analytics will tell you you want to trade down unless it's for a quarterback, because trading down gives you more bites of the apple, more opportunities to strike gold. And especially if you're moving down in such a small window, picking up that extra asset can be a massive, massive benefit to you. Just look at like what teams, like the Cowboys got their offensive tackle. They moved from 24 to 29. They got a third round pick out of the deal. That's a great asset to have when you're trying to build up the depth of your roster. So that's kind of the general idea. I took a look at Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's draft day trades, trying to understand how the quote-unquote analytics or Wall Street GM was utilizing these trades. And, you know, I wrote it for Arif Hassan's Substack, Wide Left, and we were talking about it, trying to parse out what this data meant. And we kind of came to this conclusion that Kwesi is not necessarily subscribing to the idea of the conventional trade charts or even the analytics trade charts, because when you put them all together in aggregate, he ends up around even. Like, but in his trade ups, he is very, very, very aggressive in targeting specific players. And to me, he's not worrying about the draft pick trade and the draft pick value. He's looking at the player value. So my theory is he saw Dallas Turner, top 10 consensus player. He was, I believe, ninth on the consensus board. And he sees, oh, that guy's still available at 17. That surplus value is incredible. So I'm going to go get it. And if that costs me third and fourth round picks next year, I'm fine with that, because I'm getting an immense value for the player relative to the picks. Now, the counterpoint to that is when he's making some of these trades down, or just in general, he is buying high and selling low. So like with the Rich Hill trade chart, which is built on historical trades, he is basically selling a $5 pound of hamburger meat for $4. That's a little bit worrisome, but we're also not 100% sure how he's prioritizing some of these picks, how he's looking at them. And a lot of the positives for some of these trades come from that Green Bay trade, where he moved down from 34 to get picks 53 and 59. That's doing a lot of work in helping him with some of those trades. So the process and how he's utilizing those, to me, is very, very fascinating. And I think it's more about the player than it is about anything else, which has its merits and downfalls. But he's giving us some interesting information to work with.
Feels like, Miles, he's subscribing to quality over quantity, right? Like quantity, yep, being obviously the surplus of picks and having more bites of the apple. And when you can go get your quarterback of the future and potentially who right now is the defensive rookie of the year favorite in Dallas Turner, he values more quality, and he's not afraid to use the future assets. So that is interesting, because I think in the first draft, he did the opposite, right? He was just going to trade back, mm-hmm, do all the trade charts. In this draft, I think he's maybe learned from the last few, where he has said, you know, no, I want to go with quality over the quantity of the picks we can have.
And at premium positions too. Like I think the one thing that people are missing is that they view the pick, the move up from 42 to 23. Like, I think once the Vikings made that trade up, that became like that's in the past. That's no longer like a part of our evaluation process. We're evaluating from pick 23 now. And I know we gave up other picks to get to this one, but like, everyone's like, oh, they gave up a future third and fourth to move up to 17. That's a separate like transaction to me than just, mm-hmm, like what they did. I know it all comes together because it has to, but like, I don't think they viewed it as, oh, we'd already given up, you know, 42 and a future second to get to 23. So it's probably going to be harder for us to want to move from 23 to 17. I think they viewed that as two separate transactions. And I think if we had looked at it as in its totality, that the Vikings walked away, like, don't tell me what they gave up. Just tell me, like, they walked away with a quarterback in the top 10 and arguably the top defensive player in the draft, and they didn't give up a future first. You tell me, like, I think everybody would say that's a win. Like, that's an A+, that's a home run. That's what we were hoping for. So if the Vikings had used a lot of that capital to move up to get J.J. McCarthy, would there be the same complaints as what we're seeing for what they did for Dallas Turner? It kind of views like they viewed Dallas Turner as a better overall like prospect than J.J. McCarthy. Now, obviously, position-wise, I think that you take quarterback over everything, but I think like Dallas Turner for them obviously seemed like a high-end top, you know, maybe even for them the best defensive player in this draft. And that's why they're, mm-hmm, willing to give up what they did to go get him. And so I always just viewed it as like, it's two separate transactions. They moved up from 42 to 23 to give themselves more flexibility to determine if they need to, or if they want to or can go get that quarterback, you know, in the top 10, top five or whatever, what have you. And if they can't, then that separate transaction happened when they're able to go get their favorite defensive player in the draft, in Dallas Turner at 17. So I think if you just looked at it in its totality, they got a quarterback and an edge rusher, you know, and two top 20 picks. And the value overall, like, yes, it's a lot, but I think they came away with arguably two of the best positions of need and value in terms of that. So I was good with it. Like, I'm over it. They kept their most important and most valuable future asset in the 2025 first as well. So there's a lot they can do with that. They can recoup next year, second, third, fourth, whatever, like in a trade back. So I'd put whatever money is down right now that the Vikings were trading back next year in the first. But at the same time, like we've talked about ad nauseum, they also have a lot of cap space next offseason. So some of the draft capital they might not have to focus in the, you know, to focus on drafting guys in premium areas, second, third round, they can use cap space to recoup some of the, like, that return on investment. So I see it as like a win-win. They got two cornerstone pieces that we haven't seen them do in a long time, and I'm all for it.
This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts, or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom. And it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
So what was really interesting kind of is, as you talk about that, Miles, is 23 was essentially the ultimate hedge. And yep, the Falcons kind of did it in their own way by taking Michael Penix Jr. They just wanted to make sure they got their quarterback of the future when the Vikings did the same thing. So I'm very intrigued to kind of see how all of that plays out. But it truly is amazing, some of the discourse, because later on in the draft, the Lions. I don't know how many people paid attention.
I was going
to
say this. I was going to tweet this.
They traded a 2025 third round pick to get an offensive tackle from British Columbia, Giovanni Manu. Athletic freak. I think he should have been drafted. I think he's a great player to potentially develop, and I think the Lions are good infrastructure for him. But then they also paid a 2025 fourth round pick to go get a safety they're going to convert to running back, Sione Vaki. Now, Vaki carried the ball, like, I think, 80 times for Utah last year, so it's not like he has no experience, but it was by far his worst position of the two. Are they going to get the same criticisms as the Minnesota Vikings? Of course not. Why? The Lions are the darlings of the National Football League, and even though the Minnesota Vikings traded those assets to get a top 10 consensus board player, they are going to get criticized because, oh, they gave up too much. Dude, it's for a top 10 player in the draft that the entire industry believes is worthy of that spot, and they got him at 17. But the Lions, Lions had a great draft. They're the darlings of the league. We're not going to criticize them. Bull crap. It's
the Bears did it too, by the way.
They arguably gave up more assets to go get those two players because they're fourth round picks. You know how often fourth round picks hit as far as starting level caliber players? It's not 50%. So it's just very frustrating to see all the discourse around this team being so negative. Now, look, I'm not the most positive on how they utilized their process, and I thought Turner was not worth giving up that kind of capital to go get. But I also realized that I am the outlier, and the consensus disagrees as far as where he was on the board. So I have to understand and be okay with that. But come on, the discourse surrounding these two teams is hilarious to watch because it just feels incredibly hypocritical.
Well, and for me, if you're going to give up that kind of capital, go do it like you had mentioned. Go do it for a premium position in the first round at a premium, with a premium prospect. The Bears and the Lions both gave up future capital on day three or late day two for those guys. So that, like you said, that percentage to hit is a lot less than what the Vikings did, but they gave up similar, obviously, like, you know, it wasn't quite as much, but it's still like you look at the in totality, what the Vikings gave up to get Turner versus what, the Bears and the Lions gave up to get their guys. I just don't know how people aren't like dogging on them.
So when you look at the NFC North, then 4-0, like it looks like it's going to be one of the better divisions in football again. Just with the hype to the Lions. Obviously, Jordan Love and the Packers are still probably going to be relevant. And the Bears are probably our big wild card here, because if they take the leap with all these rookies and all the players that they have signed, then it looks really dangerous. Now, all of a sudden, it's like a four-team race, and the Vikings are going to have to scratch and claw just to be relevant. I mean, do you feel like the Vikings came away with the best draft of these four teams? Do you feel like someone else did a better job? How would you kind of stack what the Vikings did compared to the rest of the teams in the NFC North?
Look, I think it's inarguable the best draft in the NFC North belongs to the Chicago Bears. They got two top five players in this class for me. Two top 10 players. Rome Odunze was fifth. I believe Caleb Williams, I had seventh or eighth. But I was just a tad lower on Williams. I still really liked him and think he could be a potentially great quarterback in the National Football League. And if they've done a really good job of trying to piece things around Caleb Williams to make him successful from day one. Because of his ability to create outside of structure, I like that they prioritize the weapon over an offensive tackle early on, because he can do things that are special. And he can handle a gross pocket because he did it for 3 years. And he can handle some of those things. So now he's got Keenan Allen in the slot, DJ Moore as a Z, Rome Odunze as your X. Cole Kmet is a capable enough tight end for, I'd say, fringe top 10. And you have
DeAndre
Smith. Gerald Everett is one of the more underrated players in the National Football League. Just consistently good. DeAndre Swift, we'll find out if he can ever be anything in the backfield based on what we thought he would be coming out of college. But they have such a great infrastructure set up for him. And their third round pick, Kieran Amagaji, the tackle from Yale, he got hurt this year, so we didn't get to see everything with his development. But my goodness, are the tools there? Incredible length, great size, great athleticism. If they can nurture him and develop him, he could be a really good starter in 1 to 2 years. They've ruined their draft by taking a punter in round four. I'm sorry, Thor. Torrey Taylor in round four, bad. But they also got Austin Booker, who I loved as an edge prospect, in round five. And if he would have tested anywhere near what his on-field looked like, he could have gone like top 40. So the Bears draft for me is the biggest winner in this division. And that's not to say the other drafts weren't good. I can't question the Packers draft because they have such a great history of utilizing their process to create good drafts. Even if the drafts don't look good on paper initially, you have to like give them the benefit of the doubt because they've earned it. I don't love the draft, but I still gave it like a BB plus because they've earned that right. Lions, well, they got Rake Straw and Terry and Arnold. God help us.
Are the Bears the team that probably scares you the most from what they've been able to do and just like the question of what if, Miles, just because with Adunze and Caleb Williams and they've been pumping this and they've, you know, trusted the process a little bit here with Ryan Poles, are the Bears the ones you probably fear the most that could pop up and start taking this division if they live up to their potential?
I think they're the ones that have the highest ceiling long term, like over the next, you know, two years, whatever it is. Right now, though, it's the Lions and Packers. I think they're competing for that pole position at the one spot in the NFC North. I like the Lions draft, unfortunately. I really liked both the corners they took and Rake Straw and Terry and Arnold. I think what they did was they really wanted to hedge their bets and get more playmakers on defense so they could go up against teams like us, the Bears, and the Bears with their new trio, and then obviously the Packers who with Jordan Love and emerging Jordan Love. So I was really big on that. I really liked what they did, unfortunately. But I'm still going to – I'm going to dog them for that, you know, that trade up, you know, giving up a future third to go get a guy, a developmental tackle. But overall, yeah, I would say I think the Bears had the best overall day because they had the first and ninth pick, and they got that first overall pick by trading back last year. So, and they got, you know, the best QB in the draft for me and a guy that clearly the league viewed as consensus number one, because I don't even think – it was like consensus that he was number one like 3 months ago. So I just think the sky's the limit for them as of right now. We'll see how things work out. But I just really love – I was a huge Rome Odunze guy. He was my second receiver off the board in this class. And I think he's just really going to be able to complement Keenan Allen and DJ Moore really well and be a really good safety blanket for Caleb Williams and get to develop while those two guys kind of lead. And he gets to follow their example. And I think that's just really good for him. But yeah, I mean, I think the Vikings had a really good draft though. I think especially those two picks, those cornerstone picks to go with the already, you know, highly developed offense that we have. I think that's a huge part of it. It's like, we weren't like the Bears needed all these, you know, they needed to add Keenan Allen. They needed to add DeAndre Swift. They needed to add Caleb Williams, Rome Odunze to it. Like, to what they didn't have. They didn't have a lot on, you know, and Gerald Everett as well. They needed to add a lot of pieces this offseason where the Vikings had a lot of those pieces already in place. So the hope is the Vikings shouldn't be too far behind. It's just all about the quarterback position at this point. Like which one hits and which one hits earlier.
Quick shout out to our friends, by the way, at Nicolay Law. So Nicolay Law knows when you or a loved one gets injured, ordinary life can come to a stop. Things get complicated. And during that time, insurance companies are likely to pressure you. So if you've been injured, get Minnesota's loyal, award-winning injury lawyers. Get Nicolay. You've probably seen Russ on a billboard. You've probably seen Russ's glorious beard around. Start your path to winning at NicolayLaw.com. Go to NicolayLaw.com. Of the day three picks, Forno, since obviously the Vikings didn't make any day two picks, is there anyone that stands out to you that you really liked that they identified and they were able to take here? I know they took a lot of shots on day three. Were there someone, though, on day three that you really liked or are kind of circling to watch as OTAs and training camp start up?
Yeah, the first two picks, Kyrie Jackson, Walter Rouse. Jackson, I was a little bit lower on. I still had a third-round grade on him, so I think value-wise, and he was 62nd on my board, so it was good value. But I just have some really interesting questions that are going to be difficult to answer because like from the outside perspective, just being like a film evaluator and not having a ton of sources like within teams and stuff, some of the things you hear, it's like it raises red flags. And one of those red flags is he played at four colleges, two junior colleges, which to me, that's not a big deal. If you're a junior college and you go to two of them, whatever. Then he went to Alabama for 2 years and didn't play despite coaches saying he's the most talented guy on the team. Well, then why wasn't he playing? What's the reason? If he's more talented than Terry and Arnold, Kool-Aid McKinstry and Brian Branch, how is he not on the field? What's the reason behind that? And then he goes to Oregon and plays really well. Is a pretty fluid athlete. The 4.5 is a little bit deceptive. I mean, he's 6'3½, 194 pounds. It has almost 33-inch arms. So he's got length. This would have been a Seattle cornerback under Pete Carroll in that cover three team. Like, that's kind of what you got, but he can play a little bit of man. So he's also going to be 25, but he didn't go to college right away. He worked in a grocery store, won employee of the month for being so good at cutting deli meat. I'm honestly not making this up. That's what he told reporters after he got selected. But those are the questions. Like, why weren't you playing at Alabama? Why did you play so little? And that late breakout is really, it just raises a red flag for me as to why. I also had Jarvis Brownlee Jr. and Cam Hart ahead of him on my board. So, like, the one interesting thing, though, is Brian Flores does a great job of utilizing players like this and getting the most out of them. So I'm going to trust the team. But from an outside perspective looking in, I just have questions. And then Rouse, really, I really like the profile. The dude is, if you remember Antrell Roll, instead of going to the NFL draft, he took a Rhodes scholarship. Like, Rouse is that kind of smart.
Yeah,
and he's getting a degree from Stanford in like biomechanical engineering, I think. Yeah. And the dude just comes off really smart. But then at Oklahoma, he didn't allow a single sack at left tackle this past year. Now, he does have some issues dealing with speed rushers. He's a slightly above average athlete, but not when it comes to quickness. And I think he's probably best going to be a swing tackle, but he can play. And when you have that kind of intelligence can help you deal with rushers and it can help you handle things. And he's got the right size. He's got the right length. You know, I think it's a really good value pick. And we talked about it multiple times in the show. You have to get rookie contract offensive linemen in the building. And they did a really good job of that here.
So, Miles, I tried to answer this question on a Ventland episode I did over the weekend because they asked, you know, with Kyrie Jackson being like this long, tall, lanky type of corner, I kind of compared it for right or wrong reasons to maybe like, does he turn into maybe a Josh Metellus type role where he can play like multiple Swiss Army knife positions? Do you kind of project him maybe as a corner? I know you're not running the Vikings defense, but like when you see a big, physical, lengthy corner like that, like, can he keep up and be potentially still like a outside cornerback in the NFL?
Oh, definitely. I think a guy with that length and that ability, he's not slow. Like a 4.5 is not slow, especially for a guy at that size and length. That's like the ideal, like prototypical press man corner and what you want for this type of defense on the outside. And the Vikings only had a couple guys that you really felt comfortable with playing press man. Shaq Griffin is a new guy that they just brought in as a press man corner. Kyrie Jackson and a Caleb Evans are pretty much the only guys with that like type of length and like strength to do that right now on this roster. So they needed that type of weapon on defense. So I don't really think I view him as like a Swiss Army knife. I think I just view him as an outside press corner, and you let guys like Mekhi Blackman and Byron Murphy kind of be your internal interior Swiss Army knives. Like, let those guys be your nickel and dime package, you know, guys. And maybe we see more Metellus in the deep. You know, and with less snaps from Harrison Smith this year, like maybe we kind of see a little bit more of like an all like a true rotation between those guys rather than just, you know, Metellus playing, I think, like 1,000 snaps at nickel and linebacker. I think you have a few other guys that can play a little bit more on those roles, too. And I'm just excited to see where they go. Maybe Mekhi Blackman is like a future like Byron Murphy replacement. He's in a contract year, but we're talking just this year. Kyrie Jackson, Shaq Griffin, and Caleb Evans are really the guys that I view as like outside corners that can play press man pretty well. Or at least you hope to. Like, I need to see more development from Evans. And then obviously we don't know on Jackson yet, but I think what they profile him as, that's what they view him as.
So, Forno, on the UDFA class, it really looks like the Vikings maybe struck gold again. They prioritized this last year by getting Ivan Pace. They paid a lot for Andre Carter, which we're probably going to be talking about in future episodes of Purple Daily on draft. And now maybe they got the next one in Gabriel Murphy. And he was, I believe, consensus 111th on big boards that I saw that Arif posted as well. So number one, in your biggest takeaway, why did he fall out of the draft? And did the Vikings potentially strike gold again here by getting, you know, essentially Ivan Pace 2.0 in the UDFA class?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm calling him right now. And I had a fourth round grade on him, kind of a late fourth at 71.2. He was 96 on my board, one of the few players that ended up going undrafted. But for me, the big thing was he's small and he is slightly under 6'2". I mean, he weighs 250 pounds, but he's got like 30-inch arms. And that is a really big detriment for an organization to want to take you. And I still think, like, once you get to round four, some of those measurable things, that's fine. Like, that's when you start making those concessions, because you don't have this wealth of a talent pool to pick from, where you don't take an outlier like that in round one. You usually don't take an outlier like that in round two. But once you get in the middle rounds, start to be like, okay, this dude can just play football. Yeah, he has some deterrence, like with arm length, but I can take him and make him great. The one other interesting element with Murphy is he didn't really play a traditional edge often at UCLA. He played like three technique, where his quickness, he'd just be able to beat guards' butts consistently. Well, if he is that quick and that good, why wasn't he playing too much on the edge? And I think these are interesting variables that some of these teams were looking at. But he kind of relates to Ivan Pace in this way. In the 100 teens on the consensus board, I think Pace was 114th or 112th last year. Murphy was 111th. They're both undersized for their position. They're both really quick, and they both know how to win and get to the quarterback. So you get a guy like this in the room. You have a guy like Brian Flores who understands how to use players and maximize their individual skill sets. Murphy's a good football player, and he was really good at North Texas. He was really good at UCLA. And eventually, you just bring these guys in and make it work. I think that he has a chance to be the next Ivan Pace. And I still don't believe Ivan Pace is like that true long-term, like high-end starter. But I think he's just a really good football player that you can trust in a lot of situations. And I think Murphy has a chance to be a real contributor early on if he shows that he can figure out how to win in the NFL with that short arm length.
So, Miles, how about these two wide receivers that they were able to grab from Mercer, too? So the Vikings have a big problem at wide receiver three, in my opinion. I mean, Brandon Powell, maybe we're making too big of a deal too about wide receiver three, but it's thin. It's a problem. What about these two guys they're able to grab? I mean, you love your wide receivers too. So are these two dudes that could potentially at least one of them maybe turn some heads and maybe crack a 53-man roster spot?
I mean, you got two different styles of players in who you got. So you got Ty James. He's like a bigger outside type of receiver. And then you got Devron Harper. Again, they both played at Mercer, but Harper is more of like your gadget return type. He didn't test as well as I was hoping he would. He ran like a 4.6, I think it was, like a low 4.6, high 4.5, I think. But he plays twitchy, plays fast. So he's a little bit more like the gadget returner guy. So maybe he develops into a punt returner for you. Who knows? You know, I would guess if he makes it into training camp and all that, he'll be in that competition for a punt return role. And then James is more of that like outside guy. He's not a true burner. I think he's like a low to mid four or five guy. But he run pretty good routes, and he's really seemed to be pretty consistent across the board. And he was a back-to-back All-American, had 1,000 yard. He's an All-American this year, excuse me. Had back-to-back 1,000 yard seasons at Mercer, and so I know he was their true like number one. And he played really well for them. I've only done like a small amount of work on him. So like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'm the expert on him, but as like a UDFA, I like taking chances on guys like that, you know, they perform really well. And analytically, I think he was like one of the top players in college football at yards per route run, like at like 3.5, 3.6 or something like that. Don't quote me 100%, but it was somewhere in that range where he was like really high up in the ranks in terms of yards per route run, which is always a positive metric. But like the small amount that I've seen of him so far is he's a guy that like going into camp with a very thin wide receiver roster and depth chart, he's someone that maybe could, you know, maybe get a practice squad role early on and maybe develop into a guy long-term that, you know, makes the roster, maybe like a Tristan Jackson or like a, you know, some of those guys that the Vikings have had over the years. So, I'm with you, Declan. That position is one I was hoping they were going to address early in the draft, you know, or not early. They didn't have a lot of picks, but like, you know, at 108 or, you know, with one of those 6-round picks, and they just chose not to. And so that gives these guys another chance. And maybe the Vikings go get one of these veterans, which I hope they do. Go give me a Tyler Boyd or Hunter Renfrow, you know, DJ Chark or, you know, Michael Gallup, something like that. I don't care. Like whether you get a guy that's primarily a slot guy in Boyd or a Renfrow, or you get a guy that's more of an outside vertical in Gallup and Chark, but they need somebody that has a little bit more overall do all skills than what they currently have at three. And I like Brandon Powell a lot. He played well for them, but I don't see him as like a damn near every down starter, every mm-hmm. down playmaker for them. He's like a really good like fill in wide receiver four, wide receiver five. I don't really view him as like a true wide receiver three. So I think they really needed to find an upgrade for this year and then find a long term solution, you know, maybe in next year's draft.
God, Tyler Boyd would be awesome.
I'm a big fan of Tyler Boyd.
Here's the big thing. I know this is going to go up on Monday. 3 p.m. Central Time Monday ends the compensatory draft pick formula. So you're going to there have already been a couple contracts announced. Mekhi Becton, Ezekiel Elliott. They're going to sign at 3:01 or later.
Yeah, I was going to say
it won't count towards that comp pick formula. So you're going to see some veterans come off the board that teams were waiting to sign for that specific reason. So don't be surprised if the Vikings, especially after rookie camp, if they want to prioritize one of those wide receivers.
A wide receiver and an interior O-line, we need that like ASAP.
Yeah. Those seem easily like the two biggest holes that they didn't probably address in the draft, and I feel like they have potentially now really limited themselves at fixing that. Now this is like a really deep offense and it's not as a glaring as a whole, but it's mm-hmm. definitely a weakness, right? Like if you were to look at the chain weak link reaction in this Vikings offense, it's definitely at guard and depth at wide receiver. Boys, before we wrap up, Forno, any last draft takes, any last hot takes from this draft class here on Purple Daily on Draft that you didn't get to today?
Man, this draft class was, we didn't think that it was very strong. And I thought some really intriguing players end up falling. The Packers taking Michael Pratt in round 7 to me might have been the biggest deal of the draft. And it hurts to say because it's the Packers and, you know, we obviously don't like them very much. But I had Pratt as a second round grade. I really loved his toughness, his decision making, his ability to be a dual threat. The arm strength was a real concern, but he is a 4-year starter at Tulane and just knows how to win, process, and do all the right things. So to get him in round 7, when you took Sean Clifford, who was one of the worst players I've ever seen get drafted in my time doing this and watching the draft, was a real steal. And he's the kind of guy that you could develop over the next couple of years, and you could flip him like they did with Matt Hasselbeck back in the day, with Mark Brunell. Like, this could be the next one of those guys. And, like, I'm still floored that Joe Milton went above Michael Pratt. Like, and Jordan Travis, too, especially with that ankle injury. Like, Pratt should have gone way higher than round 7. Even if I was a little higher on him than consensus, be having him with a round 2 grade, that's just a good football player and a great shot to take in round 7.
Miles, I know you had a blast too up on stage. We all did at the Purple Daily Draft Party on Thursday. Anything else though stand out to you from this draft class from the Vikings?
Yeah, that was a great night, by the way. Like, I had so much fun. It was mm-hmm. like a movie, man. It was crazy. It was wild in there. People buying us drinks and stuff. Like, that was cool. But from the draft, how have we not talked about the fact that the Vikings drafted a kicker? That is like rule number one for me. You do not draft specialists. I've had like Eric Eager, you know, I think we all know Eric Eager really well. Yeah. Sumer Sports VP there, but and formerly of PFF. But, you know, I asked him because I'd seen him talk about like, you never draft kickers. And that's always been my rule. But he said it's okay to draft punters. I still don't think that's okay. But like specialists in general, I don't like drafting them because I feel like you can find a, they could have found a kicker in UDFA and probably found the same type of, what is his name? Who did they draft?
Will Reichert.
Reichert, yep. Yeah. And like, cool. I don't know. Like, here's my whole thing with drafting kickers or punters is there's no room for development. It's either they start right away or it's a wasted pick because there's no really place, like with a position player, in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, those guys don't have to play right away. They can develop. They could be special teams players. You know, they could go on the practice squad. Kickers and punters, though, as your investment, if they're not coming out right away and like ready to be your starter, then it's kind of a wasted pick. And we see a lot of times that like kickers aren't always, they don't always transition well. at least through the draft, like sometimes you could just find a guy off the streets and he's good enough to be a kicker for you. And the Vikings have done that. I think Greg Joseph, they got him from the Bucs a few years ago and he kind of did what they needed to do. Like he needed to be more consistent, but like he had a big leg. They were able to develop him and get, you know, plenty out of him. They've done that with a few other guys too. Like I just don't like the return on investment that like it's either it's a boom or bust, literally boom or bust. And that boom can still be very inconsistent. And there's like no, there's just like no room for that guy to not be like an already like proven like contributor for you. So if he starts missing kicks right away early in the season and he's your starter, like I know what happened with Daniel Carlson and blah, 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 the prematurity of cutting him. I'm not disagreeing with that. But like to a degree, like the Vikings weren't wrong in the fact that he was underperforming for them. Like, yes, they might have probably should have been a little bit more patient. I understand with Mike Zimmer and all that, blah, blah, blah. But like they weren't wrong in the fact that he wasn't ready for the high leverage kicking that they needed him to be ready for. And so you kind of get that with kickers. And like he, like this guy's got to come in right away and be your starting kicker. Otherwise it was a waste.
I like it. So I thought it was great.
I find this really funny. Ugh. Declan. Ugh. Miles is making this rant about kickers when he's wearing a sweatshirt that says optimist. I just think that's one of the
greatest. I know. It's funny.
One of the interesting things about Reichard was the people that I trust as kickers, because I can't scout kickers. I fully admit that. I don't even try. But the people that I trust that know kickers really well had him as like the fourth best kicker in this class. But then you have Dane Brugler, who has him as the best kicker. And touchbacks don't matter anymore, at least for this year. And that I think that's going to stay. 84% field goal success rate, 84 out of 100. And then 10 of 13 from 50-plus, but he's only ever hit a long 52. And he doesn't have the biggest leg, but he kicked for Alabama. Like,
right?
Is there any more pressure than kicking at the University of Alabama? Dallas Turner was on KFAN earlier this morning and called him a, quote, cold-blooded sniper.
Hell yeah. Inject it.
Yeah.
I love that.
You know what? If it works, great, but you had Jake Bates in the UFL right there hitting 64-yard, like, bazookas.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I get it, but I don't. But I will say they drafted him probably for two reasons. One, their board was really, really shallow at that point, and two, three kickers went off the board after that. Two of them right away. So I think they sensed it was coming and they wanted to get their guy. It's such a complicated question.
What I liked about him, I did a little bit of digging on it, is this dude is just like a kicking prodigy. Like he attended kicking camps as like a 12-year-old. This wasn't like a converted soccer player that like, hey, someone has to kick PATs for us at high school football. What are we going to do? This dude's been kicking his entire life. So I dig it. I dig it. I think this can work out great. If Nick Saban is trusting you year in and year out, and if Dallas Turner's calling you a sniper, and let's be honest, like I know he's just being nice to me and his teammate, but like no one likes the kicker. You know, on the football, no one likes the kicker. He's got one stupid job to do, and it's so different than anything else that anyone else is doing on the football field. I have a whole rant on kick. I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with it because I'm with Miles too. There's no development on how this works. There's zero. And no one is trying to fix it. No one is trying to fix it. They're just accepting that there's just these weird dudes that have to kick a ball through a post and they're the only ones that have to do this. No one else has to do this. And it's very frustrating. And Vikings fans are just obviously rightfully so very tortured with kickers. So it's a very sensitive subject, I think, for all of us here on Purple Daily on Draft. We're going to have so much more breakdowns here on future picks or picks the Vikings made and how they relate to the future of their plans. Plus, we'll probably obviously still dabble into the UDFA class, what to look for at rookie minicamp. So Purple Daily on Draft, like I said at the beginning, isn't going anywhere. So hit that subscribe button. You can expect Purple Daily on Draft episodes every Monday right here on the Purple Daily YouTube channel. We'll be chatting at you next week.